recollection. But I'm thankful to be here, and I hope that we can accomplish good this morning as we study together and all week long. And I want to make this point clear in the very beginning, and that is that if you disagree with anything that I suggest, say, during the week, you'll not make me angry, you'll not hurt my feelings, you'll be my friend if you talk to me about it. I won't argue with you, I'll just think about what you have to say and try to profit from it. It's good to be with Mo and Judy, and they're such dear friends of ours, and I'm thankful they're here, and I know you are as well. Others of you I met at different times, maybe in different places like Pomeroy or wherever, and then when I was here some years back for Nancy's funeral. But it's good to see you again. And I solicit your prayers in my behalf this week as I try to fulfill my responsibilities to the best of my ability. It was suggested that maybe for the Bible study period it would be good to talk about how to establish authority. And it's a broad subject, of course, and ought to be dealt with in just a number of lessons in a series. And what Mo can do is just take over this thing and fix up what I've done today and all of that. But just let me make a few suggestions to you that may be helpful without laying a foundation that maybe we ought to lay in a particular series. But I'd suggest to you in the first place that New Testament authority is established in three different ways. And all of this is a lot older than any of us in this building. All of this is just as old as the New Testament is itself. And from the very beginning of New Testament teaching, people had to deal with New Testament authority in these three ways. First of all, you establish New Testament authority by either direct statement or command. That's one way. If there's a direct statement or command for a thing, then you know there's New Testament authority for it. And then the second way is by approved example. If people in the New Testament period did a thing with God's approval, then you know that that's the way to do it, and that's the right thing to do. And so any time that there's an example given in the New Testament that's approved by God, then that becomes a basis for our conduct today. And then a third way by which to establish authority is by necessary inference. If an inference is necessary, and that word and the word necessary ought to be underlined, but if an inference is necessary, then that inference becomes a basis for New Testament authority. I was telling Mo a while ago that we started preaching at Lakeview in Hendersonville. It's a fine congregation. Nothing I'd say would detract from that. But when I got there, the elders gave me a younger married people's class, and I began a series right off on how to establish authority. And things went well for about 3 weeks, and then I began to have some problems with a few people in the class. And if we have to understand all of that, we'd never understand the New Testament and things of that nature. And then, as I told Mo, as a result of that class, 7 people left the congregation and went to an ultra-liberal, in quotation marks, Church of Christ. Have a woman up in the balcony leading a choir, and they have fellowship meetings with the Baptists and all of that business. But I tell you, I appreciate the fact that you want to talk about how to establish authority. And we need to get back to basics. We need to talk time and time again about things we've preached on for years and years. We need to get back and reestablish those things. We need to talk about instrumental music and premillennialism and those things that we may think have been laid aside. But I'll tell you, problems have a way of reappearing. And they raise their ugly heads again and again. And we're raising a new generation of people that need to be taught, need to understand these principles like you and I have been raised on them. So we need to get back to basics. And this matter of how to establish authority is just as basic as anything can be and absolutely essential if we're going to stay with New Testament teaching and not digress. New Testament authority is established in one of three ways, either by direct statement or command, by approved apostolic example, or by necessary inference, in those three ways. And all through the years, and I make no apology for it, we've illustrated the thing all through the years in this particular way, and I know no better way to do it than with the Lord's Supper. There is a command for the Lord's Supper. And we observe it because of a command in the New Testament. Jesus said in Luke 22, as he talked to the apostles, "This do in remembrance of me." He had the unleavened bread there on the table before them and the fruit of the vine. This is my body, which is broken for you, and this is the New Testament in my blood. This do. And it's a direct command from the Lord. And the Lord's Supper has to be observed because the Lord commanded that the Lord's Supper be observed. But also, we appreciate the fact that the Lord's Supper, we observe the Lord's Supper as the result of an approved example that you find in the New Testament. In the book of Acts, chapter 20, Paul, on the final leg of his third missionary journey, came to the city of Troas. And he and the ones with him waited there for 7 days. And then on the first day of the week, when the disciples came together to break bread, Paul preached unto them, continued speech on the midnight, ready to depart on the morrow. But there is an apostolic example, an example of a New Testament congregation assembling together on the first day of the week to take the Lord's Supper. And that's an example that's approved by the Lord. And so we know by an approved example when to take the Lord's Supper. And you can take your New Testament and begin the book of Matthew and read through the book of Revelation, and you'll find not one single command to take it on the first day of the week. That I know of, there is no command to take it on the first day of the week. But there is an approved example. And you go to Acts chapter 20, you find a group of New Testament Christians who came together on the first day of the week to break bread, to have the Lord's Supper. And Paul and those with him waited 7 days in Troas. And they didn't take the Lord's Supper on Monday. Didn't observe it on Tuesday. Didn't take it on Thursday or Friday or whatever. They took it on the first day of the week. And because of that approved example, then that's the day that people who respect divine authority are going to observe the Lord's Supper. There's no other way to know when to take it except by that example that is proved by the Lord in Acts chapter 20 and verse 7. And then, not only that, but you can see also in this matter of the Lord's Supper how necessary inference plays a part in establishing Bible authority. Let's suppose that you're on a trip to California and you stop in Kansas at a local congregation to worship on the first day of the week, on Sunday morning. And you sit through the service, and in that assembly, the people there sing together psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. Not only that, but there are fervent prayers directed to God in that local congregation. And there's an investigation made. They study together the word of the Lord. And they lay by and store according to their prosperity in that assembly. And they have the Lord's Supper. The unleavened bread is passed. And people there eat the bread in memory of the body of Jesus that was hung on the cross for us. And they drink of the fruit of the vine as they remember the blood that Jesus shed in his death. And as you leave, you talk to the preacher at the door. And you say, there's one interesting thing. I noticed that you had the Lord's Supper today. Why did you have it today? Well, he said, in Luke 22, the Lord commanded, this do in remembrance of me. And then he says, don't you remember reading in Acts chapter 20 and verse 7 that the apostle Paul came to Troas and he waited 7 days, and then on the first day of the week, when the disciples came together to break bread, have the Lord's Supper, Paul preached. But they had the Lord's Supper on the first day of the week. And we followed that approved example, and that's why we had the Lord's Supper today. And so you say, preacher, that sounds right to me. I find nothing, no fault with that. And so you go on to California, and you take care of your business in a day or two, and then start back home, and the next Lord's Day, you happen to be in Kansas, in that very city, and you worship with the same congregation you worshiped with the week before. And in that assembly, they sing together, they pray together, they study the word of God together, they lay by in store, but there's no Lord's Supper. It's not even spread on the table. And so as you leave, you talk to the preacher at the door again. And you say, preacher, I was here last Sunday, and not only did you sing and pray and study and lay by in store, but you had the Lord's Supper. And today you don't have the Lord's Supper. How come? And he replied, well, we just do it quarterly here. Every 3 months we do it. And you say, preacher, I've got a problem. I was here last Sunday and I asked you then. I said, why did you have the Lord's Supper last Sunday? And you took me over to Luke 22 and you said, the Lord said this, do. And you said, there's a command to do it. And so that was your authority. And not only that, but you said that you did it last Sunday because of the example found in Acts 20 and 7. And I found no fault with that. That sounds reasonable and right to me that you had it last Sunday because New Testament Christians met on the first day of the week in Troas to break bread, to have the Lord's Supper. Now I want to ask you something, preacher. Is Luke 22 and Acts 27 still in the Bible? They're still there, he said. He said, you say the second question, preacher, I want to ask you is, if Luke 22 and Acts 20 and 7 were authority for you to take the Lord's Supper last week in that assembly, and those two passages are still in the Bible, and this is the first day of the week again, why didn't you have it today? If that was authority last Sunday, why is it not authority today? Would it be necessarily inferred that if it's authority for one first day of the week, it's authority for every first day of the week? And if you can show me that it's not authority for any first day of the week, any particular, I'll prove that it's not authority any first day of the week. Necessarily inferred that every first day of the week, those brethren came together to break bread. That was the day they assembled to observe the Lord's Supper. Necessary inference. And if it's not necessarily inferred for one day, it's never necessarily inferred. And if it's necessarily inferred once, it's necessarily inferred every first day of the week. Necessary inference is a way by which Bible authority is established. But I want to emphasize the fact that the authority has to be, the inference has to be necessary. A necessary inference. We have our religious neighbors and friends that baptize babies. You put quotation marks around the word baptize because they don't immerse them. Baptism means immersion, but they don't immerse them. They sprinkle them. But they call it baptism. And you talk to someone like that and say, why do you all baptize babies? And then they go over to the book of Acts, chapter 16, and they rehearse for you how Paul came to Philippi. And he found on Saturday some women out on the riverbank worshiping, Lydia and her household. And Paul preached to that family, and Lydia and her household were baptized in Acts 16 and verse 15. And then our religious neighbors who sprinkle their babies suggest, well, Lydia was probably a married woman. And it's more than likely that she had children. And it's reasonable to assume that she had the kids with her. And therefore, babies is scriptural to baptize babies. You see, there's not a single inference that's necessary. There's no reason to believe necessarily that she was married. She might have been. But there's nothing that makes it necessary to believe that. And in the second place, she may have had children, but there's nothing that necessarily infers that she had children. And you don't have to necessarily believe that she had them with her on that trip. You see, there's not a single necessary inference involved, and so there is no authority to baptize babies in that passage, because there's no necessary inference involved at all. In order for an inference to be authority, it has to be a necessary inference. For example, Jesus came to John the Baptist and requested that John baptize him. And in the record of that immersion, the Bible said that Jesus went up straightway out of the water. Now in that, there is a necessary inference. And the necessary inference is that Jesus went down into the water before he came up straightway out of it. There is no way in this world that you can come out of something that you didn't first go into. And so the inference is necessary that Jesus went down into the water. Though the Bible doesn't say he did, but the inference is necessary because the book says he came up out of it. And the inference has to be a necessary thing. Now, let me suggest to you that there are two areas of authority. One is a general or generic area, and the other area of authority is specific. I'm going to read Webster's definitions of these two words. And if I were in your place, it'd probably go over the top of my head a little bit. Let me read them to you, and then we'll talk about them. But first of all, Webster says when he defines generic or general authority, he says, positively, pertaining to, affecting, applicable to, each and all of a class, kind, or order. Big, wide range in general authority. Pertaining to entire class or kind of or order. And then he says in a negative vein that general authority is not limited to a precise import or application, not specific. That's the meaning of generic or general. On the word specific, Mr. Webster says, precisely formulated or restricted, specifying, explicit as a specific statement. Now, the difference between generic authority and specific authority is quite simple. Generic authority includes all, each and all of a class, order, or kind that's under consideration. Generic authority is broad, it's inclusive, it includes a lot of things. On the other hand, specific authority excludes everything save that which precisely stated or revealed. Now again, a person might be at first inclined to say, hey, if I've got to understand that in order to understand the Bible, I'll forget the whole thing. But the whole point is that we deal with these things every day of our lives. Every day. There is no way to live without understanding of generic and specific authority. No way. Vernon and I had four boys, Larry and David and Tim and John. Suppose that one day we're all in the living room, and I say, John, go to Kroger and buy one loaf of bread. Now that boy may be only 8 years old or whatever, but he understands generic and specific authority. He understands it. If I were to say, John, I want you to define generic for me, he couldn't define it. Couldn't do it to save his life, but he understands it. And he'll go to the grocery, if he's 8 or 10 years old, he'll go and carry out that command exactly as I stated, if he's an obedient child. Because there are just principles that you comprehend early on in life. And they're such simple things, but they have to be applied to Bible understanding just like they have to do with other things in the world. Generic and specific authority. When I said, John, that's specific. And here is Larry and David and Tim all in the same room, but you think any one of those three get up and move? Only one boy moved because the authority was specific. I specified John, and that eliminated the other three. Specific authority. And John understood that, and the other three boys understand it. But all, not only that, but I specified the store. I said, John, go to Kroger. And you know what that did? That eliminated A&P and all the rest of it. Specific authority eliminates. And it only includes that which is specified. And so Kroger is specified, and the other grocery stores in the area are eliminated. And John understands that. And you know, there's no problem with a 10-year-old boy comprehending that. He knows that. But a third thing is that what he's going to go to the store and buy has been specified. Bread. I may give him a $20 bill, but he better not come back with candy and pop and all that stuff. He has the authority only to go to the store with that $20 bill and buy one item, and that's bread. He understands that. He doesn't have to be a Einstein to comprehend what generic and specific authority involves. He understands that bread is specific. And he has the authority to go to the store and just buy bread. But I also specified quantity. I said, John, buy one loaf of bread. So he's not going to come back with a half a dozen loaves of bread. He's going to come back with one, because that's what I specified. Isn't that simple? Kids understand that. You know, and a member of the church throws up his hand, well, I have to understand all of that. I might as well just give up. And I tell you, it's simple. And we have to make simple applications of these things to Bible teaching. It's that simple. We'll talk about more in a minute. But in that statement to those boys, there are some generics as well. We talked about the specific. We specified the boy and the store and the item, bread, and the quantity. We specified all those things. But there were some generics involved. I said, John, go. If I change my illustration a little bit and make him 16 with a driver's license, you know what? If I don't specify how he's going to go, he'll be out there in the automobile. And if it'll only be two blocks of the store, but he'll drive. Won't it? And I tell you, you better be specific. If you've got a 16-year-old boy with a driver's license, you better specify if you're going to send him somewhere, how he's going to go. But I didn't specify. I just said, John, go. So he can walk or he can ride his bicycle, you know. And anything he does like that, he'll be obeying me, because I didn't specify how he was to go. But another thing is that, you know, you can understand that there may be times when a command is generic, but at the same time, be specific. Or be specific at the same time, be some things about it, be generic. Now, this is what I mean. We'll suppose that John is 16, has his driver's license, and I say, John, go to Kroger's. Well, Kroger's been specified. But you know, north of our house, about three blocks, there's a Kroger. Then there's one 20 miles to the south. And here's a 16-year-old boy with his driver's license. If I don't say the one to the north, you know where he's going to go with the automobile? So, you know, you're going to have to, you know, if you're going to go to Kroger, you've got to specify which Kroger's, you see. And so the Kroger's is specific so far as which grocery store to go to, but it's generic in the sense of which Kroger to go to. And that's not hard to understand. And all parents with teenagers that have the driver's license, they've learned that early on. Tell a kid which one you're going to go to, or he'll go with the longest one and make a good long trip out of it. But there's another thing is that when I told him to buy bread, then that eliminated eliminated tea and candy and all of that business. But I didn't tell him which kind to buy. And so he could buy bunny bread or wholesome bread or whatever and still have obeyed me, because I didn't specify which brand of bread to buy. All those things are simple. You know, and kids understand those principles. But what we have to do is to recognize that these simple things that kids understand, we have to be wise enough to make application of those simple principles when it comes to Bible things. One of the illustrations that we've made all through the years when we talk about generic and specific commands is the matter of Noah and his building the ark. And God said, Noah, you make me an ark of gopher wood. You think back in that time, period of time, that God's going to have to set Noah down and explain to Noah this difference between generics and specifics and explain that whole thing to him, get the dictionary down and define the word specifics and say, now gopher eliminates Noah. I'm confident that old Noah had enough common sense to know that if God said gopher wood, that eliminated the pine and the walnut and the cherry and all that business, didn't it? Make it out of gopher wood. Now, if God had said to Noah, now Noah, you build me an ark out of wood, then Noah would have had the liberty to have chosen whatever kind of wood he wanted. And we've used that simple illustration all through the years, but I tell you, it's an illustration that helps us to appreciate the fact that this is simple, you know, no problem. If you're told how to do a thing, do it that way. If God says do a thing, doesn't specify how to get it done, then we're at liberty. There's a generic principle involved, you see, generics and specifics. And so God specified to Noah the kind of wood that he wanted. Or another example that I remember preachers using when I was a boy. I was raised in the, you know, we just a phrase that I don't know about the scriptures or something, but I was raised in the church, and my father's an elder back before I can remember. He was 40 when I was born. But anyway, I've heard gospel preaching from the time I can remember. But I remember all these illustrations way back yonder, and they made an impression on my mind. And one of the illustrations, you know, go back to Exodus chapter 12, and the Lord said, your lamb shall be without blemish, a male of the first year. and telling those Jews about their sacrifices. And they were to offer a lamb. You know what that eliminated? Well, all of us know that eliminated cows and horses and all that business. Just a lamb had to be offered if the command was to be obeyed, and the command was specific so far as the kind of animal that they were to offer. And it was specific as so far as the age is concerned. If the lamb was over a year old, couldn't use it. Had to be under a year old of the first year. And so the Lord specified the age of the lamb. And also, it couldn't be a male lamb. It had to be a female. I mean, it had to be a male of the first year, and that eliminated the female lamb. These Jews didn't have any problem with that. They didn't say, Lord, this game got so complicated, we'll never be able to figure it out, and we'll just die and go to torment. They didn't talk that way, and didn't think that way. Simple for them to understand that fact. But if they had not respected these matters, then they would have been a disobedience. And if they had offered a cow, then they'd have been disobeying. And if they'd offered a lamb at a couple of years old, they'd have been disobeying. And if they'd offered a female lamb, they'd have been disobeying. They knew that. It wasn't a matter hard for them to understand. And what we've done over the years is to make application of these simple principles. And like, what kind of music is this local congregation going to have when we come together to worship God? And you understand that the word music is a generic term for includes all kind of music. And so it's legitimate to say, what kind of music are we going to have in the local assembly when we worship God? Well, is the Bible specific about it? Or is the command generic? Does the Lord say, make music? And so we just can make any kind of music we want when we come together? All right, did the Lord specify the kind of music? Isn't that simple? Just ask the question, and then you get your New Testament down and begin to read. And so you come across Matthew 26 and 30, and Acts 16, 25, and Romans 15 and 9, 1 Corinthians 14 and 15, and Ephesians 5, 19, Colossians 3, 16, Hebrews 2 and 12, and Hebrews 13 and 15, and then James 5, 13. I couldn't have said them all without help, but there they all are. And the only places I know of where the kind of music that the local congregation is having in its assembly is spoken of. That's where the Bible teaches regarding the music. And every time it's sings. Every time. What does that do to play? What does that do to instrumental music? Well, if we've got any respect for divine authority, we'll not have instrumental music. Well, and I tell you this, that any group of religious people who have instrumental music in their assemblies have no respect for divine authority. That's the truth of it. We understand that simple principle. We'll sing because the Bible says so. And we'll not add the other because specific commands exclude everything else. God said a lamb, it excluded every other kind of animal. When God said sing, it excluded every other kind of music. It's that simple. What's going to happen to what would happen to a Jew if he offered a cow instead of a lamb? I know what would have happened. You know what would have happened. Back in those days, God might have taken them out and killed them right there. God believed in the death penalty. Even in the New Testament, killed Ananias and Sapphira, struck them dead when they lied about their giving. God believes in the death penalty. God's not in the killing business right now. But I tell you what, God hates disobedience. And people that add instrumental music are disobeying God. That's the truth about the thing. And then people may just make all the excuses they want to make. But I want to tell you that this principle, it needs to be applied across the board. We need to understand that the Bible authority is established in one of three ways. And that when you come into its authority itself, there are two areas of authority, generic and specific. If a command is generic, then you've got authority to use any means you want to of carrying the thing out. If it's specific, you've got to do it exactly like the way the Lord said to it. It's just that simple. Mo and I have talked already that both of us are worried about conditions even in conservative churches of Christ, in some conservative churches of Christ. And he and I would agree, I think, that there are places where things like this have not been heard for years. And that people come and they get a little sermonette that they could be preaching in any Baptist or Methodist church in the city. And that's all they get every Sunday. And they never hear anything that's distinctive. Never. And I tell you, brethren, we're not going to stay on the straight and narrow path until we get down to the nitty-gritty of the thing and respect Bible authority. We have to live every day like the Bible teaches. We have to worship every time we assemble like the Bible teaches. The local congregation has to be organized like the Bible teaches and right down the line. The work of the church and all of that is taught in the Word of God, and we better respect divine authority. There are two points that I want to make. One is that a failure to recognize the exclusive nature of specific authority produces law breakers. Now let me say it again. A failure to recognize the exclusive nature of specific authority produces law breakers. If you don't recognize the exclusive nature of the command to sing, if you don't recognize the exclusive nature of the command to sing, you know what's going to happen to you? You're going to be a law breaker because you're going to add instrumental music. Failure to recognize the exclusive nature of specific authority makes law breakers. But on the other hand, a failure to recognize the inclusive nature of generic authority produces law makers, hobby writers. One of the illustrations we used through the years, go into all the world, preach the gospel to every creature. How are you going to go? Well, if I don't recognize in my life, in my understanding, my thinking, if I don't recognize the inclusive nature of generic authority, that it includes, then I'm going to be a hobby writer. And so I come along and say, hey, didn't have airplanes back in the first century, and it's sinful to send a man to Africa by an airplane. Got to go by boat. And I become a hobby writer because I don't recognize the inclusive nature of generic authority. Go is generic. The Lord didn't specify how to go. And if I specify how to go, I'm a hobby writer. I'm a lawmaker. And it'll produce division every time among God's people. You've got to recognize those principles. And the safety and the peace and harmony of the local congregation depends upon our appreciation of those matters. Well, I got done. Pretty good time until you got 2 minutes to. When I get done, I'm done. I got time to tell you this illustration. Years ago, I was living in Plainfield, Indiana, and we had a vacation Bible school, and we had services at night and for the adults, and we had a visiting preacher in every night, and we assigned him a different subject. I mean, assigned each preacher a different subject. And this one preacher came in, and he got up, and he said, Brethren, you've assigned me, I don't know what the subject was, but you've assigned me a certain subject, and he said, I only have, 40 minutes or whatever to deal with it, and he said it's so broad, he said it would take 2 or 3 hours to really deal with it properly, but I'll do the best I can, and he wound up about 5 or 10 minutes early with nothing to say, ran out of soap. Now, there's nothing wrong with running out of soap, but just don't brag about how much you know about the thing ahead of time. Well, I hope we've accomplished good, and Mo can come along and kind of fix this thing up later.